It's like if you say anything negative about Tim Burton or like some of his movies, I mean, people almost worship him like he's a god or something. And you just get like these like dagger eyes if you say anything negative.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted. We have another week here at Trailer Junkies Podcast, and I want to welcome everybody to episode 31.
Here we go.
Yeah, how was your week this week?
Good week, Jimmy.
Yeah, good.
Last week, Bryce was on the show.
Yeah.
And then after the show, he was like, I want to go camping for my birthday. So I said, well, if you're going to go camping for your birthday, you've never been camping before. So we should do a backyard camping check to see if you could do it, you know? So Frank got a tent out, and I guess a tent he hadn't used before, and he set it all up, put it in our backyard, and I thought they'd be in there 2 hours, and then they'd come in, right, first night, Sunday night.
Did you sleep out there with them?
Well, no, I wasn't going to. I was going to be like, all right, maybe next year, you know what
I mean? Yeah.
So Sunday night, I went out to check on them, 11 o'clock, they're still fooling around out there. I was like, all right, go to sleep for real now. So they went to sleep for real, and then Ann was like, check on them. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Or no, it's 1 o'clock. Check on them. So I went and checked on them. And then 2 o'clock. Aren't you worried about them? And I was like, all right, let me just get my pillow and I'll just go out there and I'll just sleep with them because I don't want to check on them every hour.
So is it like a 4-man tent?
It's a 2-man tent.
Well, how are you going to sleep? So all of you in this 2-man tent?
Well, just the three of us.
Wow.
So Bryce, Audrey, and I slept in the 2-man tent on Sunday night. And then Audrey on Tuesday night didn't want to sleep in the tent, but Bryce wanted to sleep in the tent.
So did you have to work Monday morning?
Yeah, I had to work Monday morning.
Ah, brutal.
And then Tuesday night, I slept in the tent with Bryce again. And I was dragging. I was getting really tired. And I was like, I'm not getting good sleep in the tent. I'm not getting good sleep. What's going on? And Anne's like, well, you don't have your CPAP out in the tent. So I had to run an extension cord. Last night, I ran an extension cord all the way out to the tent.
For your iron lung?
For my iron lung. Yeah. So I could slap on my sleep mask and get my full pressurization sleep. And it proved its point last night, because I woke up this morning with the mask on and it was, you know, beautiful outdoors, and I guess I need that.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That's hilarious.
So how was your week?
Yeah, week was good. It was Clarissa's birthday on the 13th. And so we did a little birthday stuff. You know, nothing too major because we're going to be meeting tomorrow for Father's Day, birthday, and everything.
Yeah.
And oh, hi. So that'll be
fun. Oh, hi.
Yeah, hi. So, yeah, that'll be fun going to, what is it, Ojai Beverage Company? Yeah.
The Ojai Beverage Company, yes.
You mentioned it a podcast or two back, and I thought, well, let's plan it then, you know? So we're going. So that's going to be exciting. And I looked at their beer list, and they have a number of good Belgians that they import. So I'm definitely going to be hitting some of those up. And I already told Clarissa, just, you know, be ready to drive home because I'm going to be in no condition. So we got that set aside.
Frank is my designated driver, so.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so, oh, that's why you talked him out of 9 a.m.
Yeah. Well, with the fires up there, there's, you know, there's even a little less to do, so.
Right.
You know, you can only be at so many wineries before, you know, before dinner.
Oh, yeah, you'd be smashed before you even get there.
Oh, so on that Tuesday night when I was in the tent with Bryce, I'm doing this, you know, I have an MBA, but I'm doing this executive MBA through this thing called Smartly. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Never did.
It's basically like a little app where you answer questions, and it's boning me up on the old MBA intro to business kind of stuff. So I was doing one of the modules in the tent, thinking he was asleep. He rolls over and he's like, what are you doing? So I let him read all these, you know, these crazy things that you're trying to help this guy with his spork company. It's like the Sporkinator is the name of his company.
It's fictitious?
It's a fictitious company. Okay. And you try to help them through to help them do their marketing and stuff like that. And Bryce thought it was awesome because he was like reading these cards and he's like, what is that? And he was like guessing stuff. And I was like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. You're wrong, you know?
That's so funny.
Luckily, it was a refresher for me, but it was a hilarious evening in the tent doing my executive MBA online classes with my 8-year-old.
Well, like I always say, if you want to become the master of something, or you want to test to see your mastery, just teach it. If you can teach it, then you're a master of it, you know? But if you can't teach it, you don't know it well enough.
Yeah.
All right, Ted, so what are we looking at tonight?
Cool. So we have a lot of trailers tonight. We are in a bit of a lull after the first week in June, when we had that huge trailer palooza of some would say around 20 trailers dropped. I think they were trying to get out before E3, but I also think they might, I'll have to check on this as well, because all the people at my work were out in New York at Promax. So Promax is the annual gathering of media professionals that are in this space. So it's all the people that do commercials, trailers, and all of the marketing for media. So they usually gather in New York or LA. This year it's New York. And a lot of people in my company were over on the East Coast with that. And I think the combination between doing that and then getting all the movie trailers out as E3 hits. E3 is the big computer gaming convention.
Right.
It's kind of like Comic-Con for video games. And that has taken over like all of the bandwidth on YouTube as far as trailering this week. And I don't know, it's not really a space you and I care so much about. Some of the games look cool, but it's not really Trailer Junkies podcast.
Yeah, I'd like to stay away from games. I mean, that's a whole other genre that, you know, and now you got to like play the games or I don't know.
That's a whole other podcast. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, we're not going down that path.
Cool. So let's do some quick hits. We'll do some hot takes on a couple of trailers first. First off the bat, I just wanted, I told you right before we started here, this The Nun trailer, which is the Conjuring prequel. It's totally insulted its audience, I think, with this opening card.
Watch it to the end.
Watch it to the end. It's like a parental, like it has like all of everything built in to just make you not want to watch it to the end. I actually put a tweet out and I said, make sure to read this tweet all the way to the end, you know,
right.
Because it was so ridiculous, you know? So we often complain about the trailer to the trailer. I actually saw a couple of threads of people complaining about the trailers to the trailer. And I was chiming in that I think there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And that's kind of part of the things that we analyze here at Trailer Junkies Podcast. And I was actually able to pinpoint that, you know, reward Sisters Brothers for their lack of trailer to trailer and also their inventive, you know, trailer open to hook you in a different way. So that's The Nun. We can put that aside. And then right, another thing that I hit you with right before we started was the Won't You Be My Neighbor trailer.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
And I know you've only seen it once. I've only seen it a couple of times. But as I said, Quentin and I were talking at work today. And he said, oh, I was watching this trailer about Mr. Rogers and I guess where my kids are and stuff. And he was like, I really got emotional. And I was like, I think that's, you know, when a trailer moves you, you know, almost to tears or welling up or something like that. He was like, well, that's what trailering is all about. That's what you want to do with your audience. So I was like, yeah, we'll do a quick hit on it for you and we'll see what we have. But I have a couple of other things to say about it after seeing it a couple of times and to talk a little bit more about the business. But what are your initial reactions? Cause you saw it once and you had some comments.
Right. I saw it the one time and there's a scene in there where they show him swimming and he's underwater in just like swimming trunks. And I love that scene for no other reason than it puts to rest all of the Mr. Rogers' tattooed Marine sniper, whatever special forces killer that they, I mean, maybe he was, I don't know. I have to look that up. However, he doesn't have any tattoos on his body. So I thought
that's why he wears the sweater.
That's right. That's always, oh, he wears a sweater because he's tattooed all, he's got sleeves, you know, not even close. There wasn't one tat on him.
Maybe he's wearing a body stocking in the underwater. I don't know.
Oh yeah. There you go. Yeah. It's one of those like swim fast suits, you know? You know, and I remember watching him as a child, and what I didn't know was they made the comment on the trailer that every week was a different message of divorce, of death, of, whatever the topic that they would cover. And I mean, he would talk to kids with disabilities. And I mean, the dude was just like super compassionate, super empathetic. I mean, I don't know how else to like put it about Mr. Rogers, but you know, he'd be like the guy that you just that just kind of cared about everybody.
Yeah. I was a huge Captain Kangaroo fan.
I watched him, never really got into it.
And for some reason, that kind of eclipsed my whole Mr. Rogers. To me, Captain Kangaroo was like putting on the show. And I liked that. I liked the idea of the show.
Yeah.
And Mr. Rogers was just at his house. It was like, the show is over. Mr. Rogers is going home. And why do I want to be here with him?
Well, he comes in. He goes from the blue sweater to the yellow sweater. He changes from one pair of sneakers to another pair of sneakers. So when you think about like what he's doing when he gets home, it's kind of like, I mean, just throwing a pair of shorts and flip-flops or something. I don't know. Like everybody else.
He's in Pittsburgh, not Canada. I mean, not California.
That's true, yeah.
To me, the interesting thing about this was the very opening card. It's a focus feature card. So focus features, obviously, it's been like this forever. But for me, a Comcast company, I'm sure they've had it on there for a while, but it's the first time that I really noticed it and I took notice of it. And as all these huge media companies start to come together and make these huge bids on all the other companies and they try to gobble each other up as, you know, AT&T and Time Warner try to merge, it's interesting to me that Comcast wants to rebrand itself. You know, Comcast, everybody thinks of NBC. So I think there is some level of, Comcast is a media company and they own media products. But I think it's interesting for them to put their brand, attach it to something like Focus Features that has a lot of cachet in the space of the awards, you know, like Focus Features. I think A24 has really kind of stepped up in that same space. But there's a lot of production houses that are just like award machines. I just think it's interesting that Comcast is like, oh, we run the gamut of products that we have to sell for you.
I get the feeling that this should be like, or maybe not should be, but that I'm going to be watching this as a, like a straight to Netflix type of a thing.
Yeah.
Watch it at my house. Maybe, I mean, I wouldn't even watch it with my kids really, because they're not going to get it.
You know what the cool thing about this is?
It is straight to Netflix.
No. The director, It's in the theaters right now. So no, but Morgan Neville, when he was selling, so he produced this independently with Yo-Yo Ma's son. So Yo-Yo Ma was on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood when he was a young auteur cellist, or what is it, auteur cellist, or what do they call them?
A cellist.
But he's like when you're a kid and you're really good at something.
A prodigy?
Yeah, he's a prodigy cellist, okay. Right? And he's just becoming really, really famous, and he's on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And apparently Mr. Rogers saw, Fred Rogers saw in Yo-Yo Ma this tension of not being ready for the spotlight, but being good enough that people were pushing him into the spotlight. And he really like took him aside in between takes and in between the shooting of it. And he took him under his wing, and Yo-Yo Ma really like thought very highly of Fred Rogers and was really amazed that somebody could care so much about somebody that they just met, and just genuine, the genuineness of Fred Rogers' heart. Like, you know, so when Yo-Yo Ma's son, who had done another documentary with Morgan Neville, had heard this story, he was like, I want to bankroll it. So he actually paid for the production of it partially, you know, sign on as a producer. And then when they shopped it around, Morgan Neville shopped it around, he actually made part of the deal that when he sold it, that PBS, the public broadcasting, got a specific window of air like before everybody else. So they will get this movie after the theatrical release in its own separate airing window for PBS. He's like, it only feels right. And I was like, that's amazing to have that kind of forethought to say, like, you know, we're using all this PBS footage. Let's make sure to get a window. I'm sure, you know, other PBS said, if you're using our footage, then you're going to give us a window. But it's a nice romantic, more romantic way to think about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, I don't have a whole lot to say about the trailer.
Nope.
It seems, you know, there's going to be some nostalgia and just the rise and, well, I don't know, death, I guess, of Fred Rogers.
Yeah.
So a second myth I happen to look up here, you know, is he like a sniper, a Navy SEAL sniper and all this stuff? And, you know, a big fat false was in there. So, I mean, there's no way that guy was like, you know, just some crazy killer or something. There's no way, you know. All right. And then we wanted to briefly cover Dumbo. It's another teaser trailer. We'll probably get to the official release later. A Tim Burton film.
Tim Burton, Disney, amazing cast. It feels, you know, Dumbo is a very small story, you know, in and of itself, the animated, you know, classic.
Yeah.
So I feel like they've really fleshed out. It's more of, you know, I'll give you my three word really off the top because we're not going to go too deep into this, but it's Burton's Big Top. You know, it feels like it's more about the circus around Dumbo.
Right.
And Dumbo's just the hero of it.
You think so?
It feels like that.
Yeah. I guess we need to see more, but I got the sense that a lot of it was just the introduction of Dumbo. And when he launches off and like glides down, like, I feel like that's where the story is going to start to begin, not necessarily about the circus, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I like the cast. There's a pretty, you know, you got Danny DeVito, Colin Farrell, Michael Keaton, Alan Arkin, and Danny DeVito's daughter is in it. So I looked up a number of things. I guess she's kind of all over TV and some movies and stuff. Tends to play like, you know, minor roles. She's kind of short and nerdy, you know, like what you would expect from, you know, Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman. I mean, you'd expect, yeah, I mean, he's 4'10", and in pictures, his daughter's like an inch taller than he is. So, and she usually plays like little nerdy girl, like I said, but in this one, she's like a coat check girl or something. And then, are you a Tim Burton fan?
I am. I think I'm a Tim Burton fan. He has a mix of stuff. I guess I'm hot and cold on him. I love Edward Scissorhands. I mean,
yeah, I'm kind of the same. Like, there's some movies people get so into, like Jack Skellington and Nightmare Before Christmas and all this stuff. And it's like, if you say anything negative about Tim Burton or like some of his movies, I mean, people almost worship him like he's a god or something. And you just get like these like dagger eyes if you say anything negative. And it's like, I mean, yeah, Edward Scissorhands is pretty cool.
Beetlejuice, I mean, classic.
Oh, Beetlejuice is awesome. Yeah, that one I do like. But the Nightmare Before Christmas, I watched it. I don't need to see it again. Like, we went to a wedding that was themed around that movie.
Which movie?
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People are huge fans of Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, incredible. And I'm like, I don't get it. Like, I watched it. I'm like, okay, I saw it. I don't need to see it anymore.
It's a neat take on a holiday before the past few years, a holiday that didn't have a lot of child accessible movies or child.
You're talking about Halloween?
Yeah, Halloween. Halloween was a horror staple. You know what I mean? Saws and Friday the 13th and Halloween.
Yeah, vampires. Obviously. And
yeah, everything. Dark and all of those grown up R rated or PG-13, hard PG-13s come out around Halloween for the grown ups. But I think it was neat to get something that had an edge to it that bridged Christmas and Halloween, you know what I mean? And it could be used for both holidays. I think marketing wise, when you talk about making a holiday movie that's kind of timeless, like Scrooge to me is a timeless holiday movie. And then you'll put your eye out.
Oh, A Christmas Story?
A Christmas Story, right?
Yeah.
So you have something that's perennial. And then you just go back to it year after year. It kind of builds on it, you know?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life, yes.
Yeah, every year you got to watch it. And then you get to the point you just have the movie memorized.
Yeah. I will say that I think his most underrated movie is Dark Shadows, which is like a remake of a TV show.
Never heard of it.
And it's got Johnny Depp as the lead in it. But it's just, it's a great movie. To me, it's very similar to What We Do in the Dark, which is the, like an earlier version, another take on something that I saw more recently, which is What We Do in the Shadows. which is Waititi's movie, his early one of his earlier movies. He did Thor Ragnarok. He directed Thor Ragnarok more recently. But he's got a cool angle on it. And they both, it's interesting to see the two of them. I don't know. It's interesting to see Waititi now and then see Burton from across the decades, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm interested in Dumbo. I want to see it. I want my kids to see it. So I think that's cool.
My last comment is I just hope it doesn't get a little bit too Tim Burton-y to where he does like crazy. I don't think it's going to get too dark. I mean, it's a Disney movie. It's a Disney story. But I just don't want it to scare my kids. They're a little bit young if we go to, you know what I mean? Like some bizarre twist that you don't see coming. And then my kids are like freaked out, you know?
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure there's none of that kind of stuff. But, and then, you know, like I said, we could cover the full trailer when it comes out, but right. I don't really have anything more on that one. And you already gave your 3-word review. So how about we move on?
Okay. So we'll move on. But since you had mentioned that, that reminded me, I saw Incredibles 2 today with the whole family.
Yeah. We're going Sunday.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I will tell you, do you remember the body count in the first one?
We just watched the first one, family movie night. Uh-huh. Our first official family movie night. We got burgers and stuff for dinner early. I made popcorn. You know, cool. I make it the old-fashioned way, like on the stove.
Uh-huh.
And then we watched Incredibles, you know, the one from, what, 2004, I think is when it was?
Yeah.
And, the boys loved it. I thought it was pretty cool. And the body count, well, it's hard to say because when that big robot thing hits the city, you don't know like what how many they're taking out, but it's got to be in the hundreds, I'd say.
Well, because of all the capes, I think it has a body count that's like in the high teens that's individually killed.
Oh, I follow you. So like for actual names that you could attribute a death to.
Right.
Yeah, so you're probably talking, probably around 20-ish, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's just below 20.
Yeah.
But this one is great. I think it's, you know, it's a great take on it. We'll talk more after you see it.
Yeah, and like I said, we're going to see it Sunday, I don't know, like early show, matinee.
Cool.
All right, Star is Born.
A Star is Born.
Yeah.
So the next three we'll kind of go a little bit deeper into, but A Star is Born. We touched on this a little bit because it was part of that first week of June releases.
Right.
This is the Bradley Cooper directorial debut, and it's got Lady Gaga. You know, it's a remake of the Barbra Streisand movie where Lady Gaga's playing a similar role to the Barbra Streisand role. Uh-huh. But to me, as far as trailering goes, it really felt like when we were talking about the trailer to Bohemian Rhapsody, the opening chords of the song in the trailer it just puts you in a place and it mellows you into like, oh, just settle in. You know what I mean? It's time to let the old ways die. And just like, and it just like relaxes you into this. I heard a coworker like playing it in his office last week and I dipped my head in and I was like, are you watching the trailer? He goes, I just started. I was like, sorry. But just that you hear those chords and it's amazing. So
yeah, I agree. I like the way it begins. I also liked how the same song plays its way through the whole trailer. And then right towards the end, they fade into Lady Gaga's voice.
Oh.
And then she just kind of like belts it out there at the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole trailer follows the length of the song, essentially, with the whole, the sound design and everything. I mean, I thought the sound design was incredible. And overall, I thought it was a great trailer. I mean, I think the favorite thing I had about the trailer is that you actually get to see Lady Gaga for what she looks like and not like in a meat suit, you know?
Yeah. No, but, you know, the one thing, I guess they kind of try to sell it like people think that she's ugly. And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't get that. You know what I mean?
I kind of picked up on that, too. And do you think that they're playing into like pop culture of like the population at large thinks she's not a good looking woman?
I don't know. I mean, you know, everybody loves Barbra Streisand, but when she said it at the time of that movie, it felt like, you know, a nose is off a little bit or something like that. It was a unique feature that some people would say isn't attractive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think Lady Gaga has that. I guess, you know, you could. I to me, it was just, it was a little distracting to have in the trailer to,
right,
to sell that line in there. Like, everything is so strong. The supporting cast in here is amazing.
I know, right? Dave Chappelle, right?
Dave Chappelle. There's, you know, a couple of the other actresses in here. I just, you know.
Andrew Dice Clay. I mean, no. Come on. Yes.
You got the bonus plan, honey.
But yeah, Chappelle playing straight was great. I mean,
the same thing.
He just cares about his buddy, you know? It's a very genuine, nice spot. And to think that Bradley's going to be the next, you know, Clint Eastwood if this keeps up, you know? It feels like he's an actor's director that's, you know, really found this peaceful place to direct from and to get these great performances from people that are his coworkers in front of the camera. And as he slips behind the camera, it's seamless.
Well, and I love how Dave Chappelle, a black guy, befriends like a country singer. You know, I mean, like, okay, sure.
It could happen.
Of course. And, you know, with Lady Gaga, well, the first thing is her voice is incredible.
Yeah.
And if you've never heard her sing with Tony Bennett, like Lady is a Tramp or any of that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to check it out. It's awesome. But I think I figured out why she calls herself Lady Gaga.
Why?
But, and this is mere speculation. But so her birth name is Stephanie, not spelled how you would expect. So S-T-E-F-A-N-I.
Uh-huh.
So Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germanotti. I mean, talk about a mouthful, you know? So Lady Gaga, much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Sam Elliott's in this movie.
The dude taking her easy for all us sinners.
So, I mean, you're talking about a great supporting cast for sure. And I think the music score throughout is going to be awesome. I don't know if I would see it in the theater, but if I did, it would have to be a theater where I know had good sound, because obviously you want it to be like you're in a concert. And if I watch it at home, it's definitely got to be like before the boys go to bed so I can play it louder than, you know, I would probably play a typical movie, because I want to hear it, you know?
Yeah. No, you totally want to.
Yeah, and her voice is awesome. I mean, it's so just the range she has for all her crazy, like, early stuff, you know, or I don't know, what would you call, like, pop, like, I don't know, pop, I guess?
I think it's pop. It's total pop, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, you're just like, oh, she's crazy. But then when, like, you really break down her voice and you hear it and stuff, I mean, wow, it's like her voice is just awesome.
No, she is an amazing voice talent. It's sad to think Amy Winehouse didn't make it, because I think...
No, she was a train wreck, though.
Between Amy Winehouse and Lady Gaga, I love the vocal stylings of both of those people.
Oh, Amy Winehouse has a great voice, but yeah. Like I said, she was a heroin addict. Oh. I mean, she was a train wreck.
And she was such a tiny little person. I was working over at NBC when she was doing the Leno show, and she walked by me, and I was like, oh my God, she's like, not only is she super short, but with a huge head of hair and like 80 pounds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was amazing that so much sound could come out of such a little, you know, package.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, that's this, you know, the way that they say Leo DiCaprio has had like twice the amount of success, because half of those roles would have gone to River Phoenix if River Phoenix had lived.
Oh, right.
I think Lady Gaga is an incredible talent, and she has, you know, all of the superstardom that she deserves, you know, that she's earned. But I think she's definitely taken some of the Amy Winehouse spill.
Possibly. I don't know. I mean, I think she cleans up better than Amy Winehouse would have cleaned up. You know, I mean, Amy Winehouse had all the tats and I guess the hair you could always change.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, it's like, what would happen if Kennedy didn't get assassinated? I mean, who knows? I mean, there's always the unknown, right?
Yep. What if?
But I think overall, if you like music, kind of the thrill of the stage, you know, if you're kind of like, how do people become stars? I mean, I know it's just a fictional story about a star being born, but I mean, I'm certain something like this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if you're into that kind of stuff, yeah, see it. I bet it's going to be a cool movie and with great music and great sound.
Yeah. Bryce really wanted to see this, and I said, nope, not for you.
Yeah, I would say it's probably not going to be there's going to be love scenes and there's going to be, you know, all the, you know, the necking.
That's how I got to turn. I turned him off on it. I was like, there's going to be a lot of boyfriend, girlfriend stuff in there. He's like, all right, I don't want to see it anymore.
I'm out.
he likes the big stage because he saw the opening of it before I could stop it. And when he, you know, you hear that open, you see the crowd. And, you know, and you feel like a rock star, you know?
Totally, yeah. Well, we need a 3-word review before we move on.
Yeah. I gave 3-word review for these last week. I think I'm only going to stick with the one for First Man because that was so good.
Okay.
but Star is Born, yeah, I wanted it to be like old ways die. You know,
yeah.
To me, that's the line in the song that he keeps saying at the top.
Yeah.
And I think to me, I have no nostalgia for the old version. And I tried to watch a trailer of the old version. And I tried to watch a little bit of the old of the 70s one. And, you know, it's nice to have a nice, fresh take on something like this. And yet it feels so nostalgic because everything feels like it's paced in that old style way.
Right.
So I think Old Ways Die is my new 3-word review for A Star is Born.
All right. Well, let's not tell my mother-in-law because the original with Barbara Streisand is definitely not in my wheelhouse. Barbara Streisand is not, and she's a Barbara Streisand fan.
Okay, so good to know.
So let's not tell her.
I know the topics are not to talk about on the way to Ojai tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure the Lady Gaga version is a sore spot sticking in her craw. Oh, it's an abomination. You know? Okay.
Well,
First
from,
Man.
From A Star is Born, we go to the first man on the moon.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Before we get into that, let's do a break.
Coming up on Trailer Junkies Podcast, the woman who sings, I don't know what her role is, but then she's swinging from the chandeliers.
Is that, I mean, to me, that was one of the most unexpected scenes in the whole thing. It was amazing. And I don't even know where to place it now, even looking back on it and trying to explain it and watching it, you know, 5 or 6 times. I don't know how to place events that I've seen and tried to slow down throughout rewatching it in the overall chronology of the story.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at @TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at @TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@trailerjunkiespodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. How about we go and walk on the moon? You know, the funny thing is, though, when you look at the way YouTube, you know, where we're watching the trailers, when you look at it and you see the astronaut face,
yeah.
I'm assuming it's the sun, you see kind of the red streaks. My first, before I saw anything, my first and initial thought was, it's the first man on Mars. And then, you know, I'm like, well, that'd be kind of weird, though, because they just had the Martian. And I mean,
yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, they're going down the Mars route and stuff. So everybody's talking Mars. Let's go Mars. And then, of course, I start watching it, and I'm just, like, blown away. And guaranteed, I already told Clarissa, I'm like, we're going to the theater for this one because...
Oh, yay.
Yeah, serious, because The Right Stuff is probably in my top 10 favorite movies of all time. I don't know when you saw The Right Stuff last and what you remember or don't.
But I don't remember.
At the end, Chuck Yeager crashed his plane, but he ejected in time and walked away from the crash.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the last scenes in The Right Stuff is Chuck Yeager walking like towards the airplane hangar after he test flew this plane that went like super high. It was like the highest flight at the time. And what they show is what appears to be Chuck Yeager in a plane that gets into the atmosphere where the pen's floating. And then later they cut to a pilot crashing with the parachute.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the plane crashes and the plane's exploding. And there he is kind of standing there bloody looking at it. And it's almost like I felt like that's going to be where it picks up. And it's almost like picking up where the right stuff ended. And that's kind of their nod to a right stuff.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so that's kind of the feel I got from that. They don't allude to it at all in the trailer, but they just kind of show those scenes, and it's got to be what it is. Like, just their nod to the right stuff, you know, because it was such a impactful movie on people, like, yeah, in the 80s and such, you know, myself included.
No, it's amazing. I mean, to me, the thing about this movie and this trailer is the dichotomy of who it is, you know? It's Ryan Gosling, right? He's kind of this pretty boy. He does some funny stuff okay. You know what I mean? I thought The Nice Guys was really good. I thought he played a low life really, really well. And the comedy stuff is hard to do, hard to pull off. And then La La Land, I fell into it. I loved that movie.
Oh, I watched it, yeah.
Yeah. And Damien Chazelle is the director of that. He's the director of this. And he directed Whiplash before that. And to me, that meter, the way he's stepping through these movies, I mean, Whiplash got this the Oscar for the main bad guy in that one. And then now La La Land cleaned up, took home a lot of Oscars. It just feels like this one is just like setting you up for whatever you want to put into it. You know, it's like, what angles do you want to put into the Oscar race for this thing, you know?
Yeah.
Claire Foy's all over the place. You know, she did Unsane, which we covered, you know, a few months back. And now she was the queen in the Netflix, you know, show The Crown. And now she's in this as this wife. And it's just such a tragic space where she's like at the mercy of the lack of technology. You know, it just feels like she's the only one who understands that they don't have the skill set. I mean, it's a point in time in history where, by all intents and purposes, the sheer math of the advancement of technology hasn't advanced to a space where we could put a man on the moon. But yet, by the—
They're inventing it at the time.
Yeah, they're inventing it, and they're drawing with chalk on chalkboards. I mean, did you see Hidden Figures? I mean, to me, Hidden Figures is like the flip side of this. You know, it's like room full of people just doing tabulations to double check and to check, you know, against these things.
Well, they went to the moon on less computing power than your cell phone.
Oh, much less.
I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. And, you know, and then they show like Apollo 1 astronauts burning, you know, and it's
tragic.
I guess it's, yeah, I mean, I guess it's been long enough. It's almost 50 years, whatever. But I think what this trailer does so well, and I'm sure the movie's going to be right there with it, but I think what the trailer does so well is, you know, the outcome. You know the story.
Right.
You know they land it, and you know they come home, and we've gone back, you know, a bunch of times after that and everything. But it plays out so like dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
That you're thinking, are they going to make it this time? Like, I mean, they really like lay it into you, think that so you like you second guess, like, what if they don't come back, or what if they don't land, you know, and all this stuff. I mean, I thought they did that so awesome, because like I said, even though you know everything, it's so well documented, obviously, and the story is so told. I mean, I read a book about a month ago about the space race, and, you know, to my boys. And more or less, it started with like the the Mercury missions,
right,
the Gemini,
right.
And then it went into, and it ended with Apollo 11. So it was more or less the Mercury and Gemini, like all the different missions. And now each launch essentially had a task that was like a proof of concept. So they said, okay, well, we need to go walk out in space. So this mission is nothing more than walk out in space. And then they launch a couple of rockets. Okay, we're going to meet in space and connect. See if we can do that. You know. And each mission had like its own specific task. But nothing was the whole thing they needed to do. You know, and then there were like Apollo missions where they just flew around the moon and came back. They didn't land, you know, and you know, they got close to see the surface. But like I said, the book we were reading ended with the launch of Apollo 11, and that's just where it ended.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that, too, because then this movie kind of picks up there. And when, especially when they get older, I definitely want them to watch this. And I think we're going to do like a movie night, like a back to back to back.
Okay.
Of The Right Stuff.
Apollo 13.
Well, no, hold on. The Right Stuff, First Man, and end with Apollo 13.
Oh, okay. You're doing it in chronological order, not the movie.
You can't do Apollo 13 before Apollo 11.
Okay.
You know, or Apollo 1, whatever. But no, seriously, though, it was totally awesome.
No, it's amazing. And I was concerned. It felt on first blush of it, when you look at that poster, and this is another one where, you know, when it came out, everybody grabbed it and made their own trailer of it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of different takes on what we're going to use as the thumbnail in there. But I really think like the poster that you're talking about of him, the steel eyes of Ryan Gosling, like just
right,
staring off. It is the moment. You know, I think some of the secondary trailer spots took that opening shot where he's looking out and it's reflecting and you could see the launch, you know, as the trailer's starting off. But I definitely think the American audience likes this in your face, super close up. And it's what's going to sell this movie.
He's got to do a rock star job because you're playing, I mean,
Neil Armstrong.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing the first guy to walk on the moon. But the one question I have, though, I mean, I was wondering, and maybe you can answer this. I mean, I was wondering if they used the same soundstage that they used for the fake of the landing.
We aren't going to go into that.
I jest.
Who was it? It was Jim Carrey. He covered that pretty well in his movie.
Yeah, whatever.
They saved all the sets, so it's cheap. It's cheaper that
right,
way.
Yeah.
You got to save a buck in Hollywood.
But yeah, you know, and the thing, and I guess my last comment that I want to make too is what I love about these kinds of stories, like The Right Stuff and you know, First Man, is that it's like a real life Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And we already kind of touched on it too, but it's like a real life Star Trek where we leave Earth, we go to a whole other world, even though you can see it from your backyard, but you go to a whole other world. And you did it on like kilobits of RAM or something. I don't even know, like, and they probably didn't even have RAM at the time. It didn't even exist.
No, they were radioing back and having them do the calculations, you know, in those big rooms, you know?
Yeah. But I'm talking about like just the controls of the landing and almost running out of fuel. And then Armstrong takes control and lands it himself. I mean, like totally insane.
You know, they put so many of these pivotal, like emotional scenes in this trailer. When he's explaining to his son, you know, like that they have plans to come back, or, you know, it's just like you could tell that there's no certainty. I think that's what you were talking about. They sell the idea of the true feeling of the moment.
Totally. To the max. It's incredible.
And it's like we all know, you know, everybody knows in the world knows the history of it. But you get lost because the performance in a trailer is so good that you're like, oh my God, will he make it? I don't, like, have to go see the movie to figure out if they're just doing a crazy twist on it.
Yeah. So when they say it's the story of the most dangerous mission in history.
Yeah.
And you kind of don't really think about it as like the most dangerous mission in history, but you're going to the moon. How could it not be the most dangerous mission in history?
Yeah.
Like ever, you know, like anything, the smallest thing that goes wrong, you're just done.
Oh.
You know, I mean, you're done. Like you're just going to die out in space.
And they knew it. And they knew that would, you know, that there's a sliver of a chance of success, you know. And then they had the failures that were on the ground, you know. When you fail and you walk away from crashes and things like that, it's like, all right, guys, we can't do it here on the ground. So why are we going to go all the way into space and just cross our fingers and trust in the plan, you know?
Well, and that's a good point because my next door neighbor works for United Launch Alliance. And here at Vandenberg Air Force Base, they launch, you know, rockets and satellites all the time. Yeah. SpaceX does. And SpaceX has had failures, you know, as recently as probably within the past even 6 months or so, I would imagine, where United Launch Alliance is like a partnership between Boeing, Lockheed Martin. I think those are the two. And they've had like hundreds of flawless launches, like complete success. And, you know, my neighbors and stuff and the people I talk to that work there, they're always just saying like, oh, yeah, look how great we are. We haven't had a failure in like 200 launches or what, 187 launches or whatever it is.
They have that sign up in their break room.
Yeah.
200 launches is a mistake.
But then you look at SpaceX, who does have some, you know, errors and problems and things blow up on them or they miss a landing or whatever.
Right.
But what I say to that is, yes, ULA is doing what works and what continues to work. And it's guaranteed that if you need to get a satellite in space, well, you hire them and they're going to get it there for you. But at the same time, SpaceX is pushing the envelope so hard, trying to reinvent things and improve things and make space travel better in a lot of ways and get away from the old model of doing stuff like let's land, you know, our first stage and let's reuse it. And, you know, and I don't know if you saw the one video where they had the two stages land or the two boosters land side by side.
Synchronicity. Yeah.
Oh, dude, that was amazing. You know,
it's beautiful.
Oh, that was total like Buck Rogers stuff, you know, and then I think the third one missed the landing ship or something, you know, and it blew up or whatever. And then, you know, you might look at that as a failure. But the thing is, they're learning from every one of these launches and they're improving everything they're doing, where United Launch Alliance, I think, will eventually get to the point, you know, with the Delta IVs and the Atlas V's and all this.
Yeah.
They're going to get to the point where what they're doing is the old way of doing it. And they're eventually going to lose to SpaceX is the way I see it.
Really?
Because, well, SpaceX is just pushing the envelope to make things better. And in doing so, you're going to have errors because you learn by failure.
Yeah.
You know, if you do it right 100% of the time, always, you know, if you always get the math problem right, well, then you don't learn what you don't. You're never learning new math, you know,
mm-hmm. New math.
No, oh, the new math sucks.
Boo, new math.
So 3-word review for First Man.
So like I said, 3-word review for this. I'm sticking with it. Bryce botched it last week because he was saying L.A. But the 3-word review for this is La La Landing.
La La Landing. So explain it to me again. I don't remember.
So Damien's last movie was La La Land. So the director and lead actor of this movie were in a movie last year, a little movie called La La Land. And I just thought this is such a departure, such a full undertaking that it was, they stuck it, you know, they stuck the landing. And when you say stuck the landing, you know, the original stuck the landing is Neil Armstrong.
I was saying the Sea of Tranquility, right? Well, and the funny thing is, though, I mean, like the audience for both movies could, I mean, they're going to be complete different audiences that you're going to be attracting and that you're writing to and directing to and the musical scores and all this stuff is just going to be completely different for who you're trying to attract to the theater.
Right.
No, awesome.
And I think Whiplash 2 had a different audience and it was this, you know, it's a kind of like you go from this, we'll do a small, you know, intimate portrait of a student and a teacher and it will get that done, you know, and he checked it off the list and then he's like, all right, now we're going to go big, you know, and we're going to go big and we're going to have sets and it's going to be very surreal and we'll have this crazy, you know, musical space of La La Land. And then he hits this historical, you know, historical fiction, historical close to fact spot of this incredible achievement in American history. You know, when we talk about how do superheroes and how do the superhero movies top themselves every time, and you're like, oh, it just has to go bigger and bigger and bigger. I love the idea of this director just like saying, how can I go bigger in the most interesting way possible?
The trailer does such a great job at making us believe that they might not pull it off. It blows my mind. So anyway, yeah, I don't have much else.
No, it's amazing.
All right. So last one, Bad Times at the El Royale.
Yeah. So Bad Times at El Royale. I didn't know what to expect, but to continue with our space theme for our three main movies this week, we went from A Star is Born, which is the stars in the title.
Yeah.
And then First Man, obviously, is about the trip to the moon. And then this is from the screenwriter of The Martian. So you were mentioning The Martian in the last trailer review, but this is from the guy who did The Martian.
Right. Yeah.
And then a horror director for The Cabin in the Woods, which is a super inventive horror flick, kind of escape room-ish, you know, space. I know we're not horror guys, so it doesn't really...
You know, you take Sam Elliott, who was in The Big Lebowski, and you take the dude...
The dude of Bynes.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges, you know, playing the priest, but something tells me he's not really a priest.
Well, he tells you. It's him. He's the one who tells you.
Yeah, this movie looks insane. Chris Hemsworth, like, he plays one of those, like, sociopathic kind of people that is going to keep you at the edge.
Yeah.
His character is going to be so unpredictable, you don't know which way this thing is going to go.
So I did another thing, hopefully, for you to notice. These three trailers, none of them had the trailer to the trailer on the front end of them.
Yeah.
So I think as far as trailer editing goes, these three trailers of the big batch that, you know, that I was combing through because we had such a embarrassment of riches with the first week of June, I said, let's go with three trailers that are just like the top of the game, top of the heap. And the first one had the musical stuff and it kept you going in a way. And then when Lady Gaga hits you over the head with her voice, you feel it, you know?
Yeah.
And then Damien in First Man, he has you on the edge of your seat, like we said, forgetting your history. And then this one, it has this beautiful lost in time, lost in space. It's another period piece. We're brought back into the 70s, the early 70s, I guess. And it just ramps up, you know, the music's there. And as it starts to layer in, by the time we get to Chris Hemsworth and his, you know, walking through the fields with his cult followers,
right,
you're lost in the wash of just like these cuts and the jumps. And it's like, it would have been so easy to take that section and throw it at the top of this thing. And it was like somebody made a concerted effort not to let that happen in this space, because there's a build to this trailer, and they actually let it build. And they just let the audience, if you're going to check out in the first 5 seconds, then that's on you. You know what I mean?
And I did not see that guy getting blown away with the shotgun from the behind.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming. Really quick, though, again, just to get to the trailer of the trailer that we sometimes talk about too much.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a big thing. A lot of people who were very hot and hating it. And then some millennials chimed in. Some millennial editors, I guess, were chiming in. Trailer Beat, if you're out there, let me know. And he said, I'd like to hear millennials say that they don't like this 5 second, you know, at the top. And other millennials were like, no, we don't like it either. And it's all about investment. You know, like if you're invested, if you've sought out to look for a trailer, then you're going to watch it. It's like when you're swiping through a feed and something, you know, you pause on something for a second, that's the kind of person that you're trying to capture with those 5 second things. But these three movies don't care about those people. So it's like, I like that. It's like, it's an older way of, we're not going to clickbait you into our trailer.
Right. And that's what I wanted to say is just about, you took the words out of my mouth, but no, that's fine. That's fine. We're on the same page. But when you look at A Star is Born, First Man, and Bad Times at the El Royale, each one of those grabs you from the get-go anyway.
Right.
I mean, you have the huge crowd with the stage at the concert. First Man, I mean, the rocket ignites.
The silhouetted launch, yeah.
Yeah, it's just bam, there it goes. And you're thinking, you don't really, initially you don't recognize it because like you don't know to recognize it. You're thinking it's a nuclear missile or you don't know what it is, right?
Right.
Until you kind of figure it out. And then the jukebox. How cool is that? Like it just puts the record down and you're like, what? And, you know, it just grabs you with something so simple as a record playing on a jukebox.
And it's music, you know, the music is just, it's... It just shows you that the sound design is important in movies, but it's just so much more important in trailers, I think.
Oh, the sound design for Bad Times at the El Royale is just incredible. And when they get to the singing and the clock ticking.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, and that clock is just so
ominous.
Oh, it's just there, you know?
It's a telltale heart. It's like you know that it's going to hit the fan when that starts pounding away at these characters, you know. They're going to start dropping like flies, you know.
Right. And quite honestly, the trailer doesn't even tell you, it doesn't give you really any information. It tells you a lot, but it doesn't give you any information about what they're, I mean, there's like a armored truck heist. And then there's this casino and they're like, the FBI looks like they're doing monitoring.
Yeah.
And the woman who sings, I don't know what her role is, but then she's swinging from the chandeliers.
Is that, I mean, to me, that was one of the most unexpected scenes in the whole thing. It was amazing. And I don't even know where to place it now, even looking back on it and trying to explain it and watching it, you know, 5 or 6 times. I don't know how to place events that I've seen and tried to slow down throughout rewatching it in the overall chronology of the story.
Yeah. And then as you move on through, then Chris Hemsworth comes in as this crazy like cult leader. I mean, like you mentioned, the layers upon layers that just get put into this trailer as you watch through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it takes place, what, like in the late 40s, I guess.
Is that the time frame?
I'm thinking so. I didn't look it up. I mean, but just based on the cars and the way the towns look and stuff, I'm thinking it's probably the late 40s, early 50s at the latest. I think going into it, you're not going to know what direction this movie's going to go in. It's kind of a mobster, FBI, maybe racketeering, money laundering, casino. I mean, I don't know. It looks awesome.
Yeah. No, it's going to be amazing. So when I started to figure this out and I was starting to look into this, the director of this is Drew Goddard. You know, I thought it was Jean-Luc that he was related to Jean-Luc Godard. And I had all built up this huge fantasy that he was like a child of French New Wave. But obviously he's not. He's from Alamo or from Texas, and you know, he's brought up in that filmmaking. But I was happy to see that he was big into television and he was with Alias and Lost, so he has a good pedigree. I thought it was interesting that they went with Cabin in the Woods as his, you know, legacy card. You know, I guess he doesn't have that many of the full directorial or the screenwriting credits, you know?
Yeah, so he doesn't have a deep legacy, essentially.
I thought he did. I mean, when you talk about, you know, Alias and Lost and Cloverfield, to me, it feels more like Lost.
Well, that would be more of a TV legacy, though, not the big screen.
I guess so. But the ensemble nature of this, I don't know, maybe Cabin in the Woods is more like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you're talking me into it.
For me, anyway, I think it's more of an IHV.
What's that?
In-home viewing.
In-home viewing.
No, I don't know. I mean, I think this is the kind that, you know, it's a rainy night in October or something, and you got your popcorn, and you're snuggled up with your wife, you know, or whatever, and you just kind of just bury yourself into the story and, you know, you just run with it, you know, because it's going to be so bizarre and maybe kind of creepy.
Take you all over the place, right?
Yeah, you know, so then you're going to, you know, you got to go to the bathroom or something. So you're going to go and you come back and like, you don't know, like the lights are off. You're kind of creeped out. You don't know who's around the corner. Or like you're in the movie theater, you come out and it's like there's the lobby and it's all loud, you know, and And it kind of takes you out of the mood by the time you get home.
That's why I just hold it. I don't go to the bathroom during a movie.
Well, I don't mean during the movie. I'm just saying, like, even when you're leaving, like, okay. Yeah, like, when the movie ends here, like, let's go to bed. And you're kind of, like, with a flashlight down the hallway, you know? Like, I don't know why I wouldn't turn the lights on, but... Yeah. It'll keep you at the edge of your seat, though. It'll be so unpredictable, I have a feeling.
Oh, that's amazing.
Lots of twists I foresee.
Yes. Did you ever watch Leftovers on HBO?
No, never did.
You should definitely catch at least the first two seasons. I gotta catch up on the last two, I think.
So you got to catch up on a few of the Leftovers?
That's right. So yeah. Even though this wasn't Leftovers wasn't a Drew Goddard TV show, the ensemble nature and kind of all these left turns and the craziness of this make me think of that space. So my three-word review for Bad Times at the, what is it? El Royale.
At the El Royale.
The Bad Times at El Royale. The three-word review for that is Pressure Cooker Leftovers.
Pressure Cooker Leftovers. You got to tell me that one.
Okay. So Pressure Cooker Leftovers, because I enjoyed the Leftovers so much, and yet it had all these crazy twists and turns and voodoo, and like we spent half an episode inside a fever dream. So because it strung it out over the course of all these seasons, this is kind of like condensing all of that into one movie and then just seeing what comes out of it. So it's just kind of like the pressure cooker of it all.
My last comment too with this, the Bad Times, I love the card where they show everybody's names in like the Vegas neon lights.
Yeah.
Totally cool.
It's definitely this overall stylized. And when they use it in the trailer, it adds to that ticking and the pace of everything, because the people's names are popping in and they're neon and they're flickering on and off. And
right.
It's so well done.
Yeah, very cool.
Bad Times at El Royale, that's the one I would see in the theater of all three of these. I mean, First Man, I would like to see. And I think First Man would be the easiest sell to get Anne to go to the theater with me to see. So probably end up seeing both of those in the theater.
All right. Well, I mean, we covered a lot tonight.
Amazing.
What was it? Five trailers or something, I think?
Five trailers. Six if you include The Nun.
The Nun. Yeah. Make sure you watch it. You know what that reminded real quick. You know what that reminded me of?
What's that?
So like, I don't remember if it was like late 90s or early 2000s or something.
Uh-huh.
But there was this thing people would like send you an email, right, of some video or whatever it was. Or like, they're like, oh, get close. Turn up your speakers. And then you're like, okay, let me see. And you get close. And then all of a sudden we'll put up some like demonic looking figure screaming. Ah! You know? And then, of course, you jump back 1,000 feet.
Right.
Yeah, because it scared the hell out of you.
And then they made videos of like reaction coverage of people reacting to this video, you know?
Yeah. But that's kind of what the ending reminded me of a little bit. Like you're sitting and all of a sudden it's just like, I don't know where they come, you know, because you got to watch it to the end.
But it's so used, you know what I mean? Just by saying watch it to the end, you've already destroyed any of the anticipation.
Well, yeah. And the funny thing is, like, I'm watching it and stuff, and all of a sudden this nun, I guess, comes out of nowhere. And I was like, well, that was kind of scary, but I was expecting something to happen.
Right. Were you expecting somebody to grab a chandelier and swing from it in Bad Time at El Royale?
Nope. All right, man. Well, I had a great night tonight. This was a lot of fun. We covered a lot of stuff and had a good conversation, I think.
Now I have to go out to the tent where my children are probably asleep waiting for me.
Wait, they're camping again? Yeah.
Yeah, I said tonight was going to be one of the last nights, kids. We got to fold this tent up. We got to give it a break.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be we might be doing some camping over the summer. That's probably not a bad idea to do a test run.
Oh, have the boys gone?
No, not yet.
Well, no, they've gone. Haven't they gone camping with Frank and Barbara and stuff?
Yeah, but in their tent trailer.
Yeah.
Not on the ground though, in a tent.
Oh, okay. You're going to do like that kind of camping.
Yeah. So like pull up the car, throw down a tent and go to sleep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but I should probably do it in the backyard, you know, just for a night and just to say, hey, you know, and I mean, I would be out there with them, of course.
Yours are a little smaller than mine.
Yeah, 3 and a 5-year-old in the middle of the night, right? They'll be freaking out. But yeah, that'd be fine. And then You know, just to get him used to being out there and you know, maybe we could get a little fire going or something, do some marshmallows. I don't know.
No, we had dinner one night outside with a fire pit going. So they
awesome.
They've enjoyed that. But yeah, cool.
All right, man. Well, hey, you have a good night.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Definitely. All right. You guys have a safe drive.
All right. See you there.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.